It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Talk is about to begin. Hey, 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 come on in.
Welcome back to your Wednesday Buckeye Talk from Cleveland.com. Doug LaMaurice, Nathan Baird, Stephen Means. We are going to have a crossover podcast on the back half of this one. We were joined by our friends from Blue White Breakdown. It's the Penn Live Penn State crew, Bob Flounders and Greg Pickle. We did about 40 minutes crosstalk, and they're going to run it on their podcast as well, about this Ohio State-Penn State game. It's a great way for you guys to get a sense of what the big issues are with Penn State. What are the names you need to know? How do those great beat writers, what are they thinking about that Penn State team right now? So make sure you hang on for the second half of this Wednesday pod. But we're going to start off with what we learned today from Ryan Day. On Tuesday, we talked to Ryan Day. We talked to Garrett Wilson. We talked to Josh Myers. And we talked to Haskell Garrett. So Nathan, Stephen, and I are here to deal with that. And we want to talk about where did our thinking change at all? But I do want to start with this because it's in the news. This Wisconsin quarterback situation with COVID is a mess. Nathan, as we talk here at 4:30 in the afternoon on Tuesday, maybe a brief update on where things stand. But you know what? It may have changed by the time people actually listen to this Wednesday morning. So we don't have to spend too much time on that. But you asked Ryan Day about what Ohio State would do in a similar situation. I think that's important information for people to know.
So yeah, just for the most immediate update we can give is that Jeff Petrakis, who has done some really good reporting here in the last couple months for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on Wisconsin and on the Big Ten, he reported at 4:16 that the Wisconsin game in Nebraska may not be played. So that's obviously going to have probably resolved itself by the time anybody hears this, but that's just where we are right now in our understanding of things. And so the one question I wanted to ask Ryan Day today, because I thought this was just so pertinent and so immediate to what's going on in the Big Ten, was what's your plan? Like, have you guys done something different to prepare or try to mitigate the chances of this happening? Because the Big Ten procedures are supposed to mitigate, or it's supposed to kind of negate the need for contact tracing the way you've seen it in some other conferences where one guy will get it and then a bunch of people have to quarantine because they may or may not have it and you have to go through all this testing. Well, now if you're testing everybody every day, that's supposed to kind of alleviate the contact tracing problems. But obviously within any single position group that gets tricky, because if one gets in and maybe it only gets in and they're only around that one position group, but they can spread it to everybody in that position group, and at quarterback, that's obviously a bigger catastrophe than anywhere else, potentially, especially at Ohio State, where you've got a Heisman Trophy finalist and then two freshmen and a career backup. So my question to him was like, what's your plan? And he said, oh yeah, we've already factored that into how we do things. In fact, there's times where I pull Justin away from the rest of the quarterbacks and he just works with me that day. And some of it is because I think he is Ryan Day and he's an NFL quarterback coach and he was a quarterback and he wants to work with Justin Fields and all that makes sense. But he said another reason I do that is because that's less time he's spending with those guys. And it creates some more, just an additional piece of separation from those guys during some practices. So it's not the only reason they do that, but I believe him when he says that is an aspect there, that they need to protect themselves in other ways as much as they can. So is that going to be, at the end of the day, is that going to save them if that comes through? I don't know, but it's something that they already had in their thinking before all of this came up with Wisconsin.
Yeah, come in. Hey, Ryan, what's going on? Hey, Corey. Hey, listen, man, I was just thinking, I have a great idea about our COVID protocols for this year. Oh, yeah, Ryan, what do you think is the best way for us to handle the quarterbacks? So here's what I'm thinking, Corey. You coach the backups, I'll coach the Heisman winner just for COVID, just to keep everybody safe. Well, I'm the quarterbacks coach. What if I coach the Heisman winner and you coach the backups? No. I think this is easier. Those young guys need you. Just let me take Justin out of the room just to make sure nobody gets infected. And then I promise it'll go back to normal next year. But just for now, for
No.
safety, this is how we're going to do it. Okay, Ryan. Thanks, man. Okay, Justin, we're leaving.
He didn't say 100% of the time, by the way. He
Yeah,
didn't say that Justin Fields works with him 100% of the time.
I think, ironically enough, COVID, this is the one place Ryan Day has gotten lucky with COVID, is that he can do that. I think he was going to do that anyway. I think COVID just gave him another excuse on top of it to do it. But it's no. You develop the guys behind the starter. I'm going to work with the starter because I'm the reason why the starters are here. And I don't even, I mean, that might be the case going forward, even next year. It's no. You work with the new guy who's a recruit who still needs to develop, and you develop them. But when they actually need to get on the field, whether it's CJ Stroud, Kyle McCord, or Jack Miller, or whoever else down the line, they come with me when it's time to start, which is part of the reason why I don't know if Corey Dennis is on the field or not. We should probably ask about that. But Mike Yurcich wasn't on the field last year. On game day, the quarterback belongs to Ryan Day. During the week is when Mike Yurcich did his work.
Can I tell you this? If next year, when COVID's done, Ryan Day comes in the quarterback room and says, "Hey, one of you three come with me," the other two are going to stand up and say, "We're transferring."
Yeah, that's true. That is also going to happen. Either you go with Ryan Day or you go somewhere else and maybe turn into Joe
You don't
Burrow.
believe, so you don't believe Ryan Day when he said that that is a factor in why he did that.
Are they doing it at the other position groups? They're pulling
The
out the
quarterback's a
best guy.
different position than the other position groups.
I'm hearing
I
that.
know. I believe it. I believe it's also coincidentally a great rationale to do the thing that Steven and I are talking about. I get it. I get it. I get it. But also, this is what I mean. And I don't really. I mean, it's Ryan Day is a quarterback expert. Ryan Day has coached quarterbacks forever. Right? Corey Dennis has been a full-time quarterbacks coach for less than a year. So I think it makes sense, I guess, right? I mean, let the backups can infect each other. You don't care, but keep Justin Fields as isolated as possible.
It's a terrible way
But
to put that.
well, but again, those and again, it's not 100% of the time. So Justin Fields may be spending part of a practice around those guys and part of a practice not around those guys. I think it's just one of those things that gets mixed in that any less contact is better.
I
Right,
think
but
when
if
they're on the practice field, they're together. But if they're doing anything that's in a classroom, I think he's just on a phone call with. I think he's just on a Zoom call with Ryan Day.
it's just one of those things again. I mean, but like, unless you're really breaking the guy out by himself all the time, okay, well, he's with them some percent less because Ryan Day pulls him out, right? But he's still around if he's in a room, if one of the backup quarterbacks has COVID, one of the backup quarterbacks has COVID, and Justin Fields is around him for X number of hours instead of X plus three number of hours, he still has a chance to get it. So I'm like 75% kidding and 25% not kidding. But I guess you have to have. Did you think when you asked the question, Nathan, that Ryan Day's answer would include something that yes, we are trying to keep them apart? Or did you think it might be just like, hey, man, we got to do what we got to do and keep our fingers crossed and we have testing?
Well, that was exactly the way I asked the question was, are you doing something that changes their behavior in a way that normally would be, because that separation would potentially help you avoid spreading an infection? Or are you confident enough or just putting your faith in the daily testing and saying, once that happens, once they're cleared on a daily basis, then they get to come in and mingle just like they normally would, and you're kind of leaving it up to putting your faith in the testing. And he answered the former. He said that no, like they are changing their behavior somewhat, on at least an occasional basis, as a way to kind of give further mitigation to the chance that this might happen.
So I did finally pull all this together, and I thought we would do it on this podcast. And the way it worked out, we went a little longer on the Penn State crossover than I thought we would. It's good stuff, though. You guys will like it. But I did pull out the what Nathan is going to have to do because he lost the Nebraska bet. And I did group it. And so we'll get to it on the big Thursday pod. I think we're going to do rapid fire in the Thursday pod, but we'll take a segment to decide what Nathan's going to do to pay off the bet. And Nathan, just so you know, I have four folders where the suggestions were basically organized into four topics. One of them is something you have to do on the podcast, like an embarrassing thing you have to say or sing or something like that on the podcast. One is something embarrassing to do, like during a news conference, like during a Ryan Day news conference, like ask a silly question or something. One of them is related to food, you know, having to eat something or pay for a meal somewhere or go eat something. And the other one is related to shaving something or growing something, related to mostly facial hair. And so we'll give you some options to decide. We're not going to force anything on you, but we'll give you, you know, some of the things that you can do. And like one of them is just like make you go eat like at a chain restaurant that I would pick out. And it's like, you lost the bet. You didn't win the bet. You don't go get to eat at a delicious chain restaurant.
For losing the bet, I get to go eat baby back ribs.
Well, and by the way, just anybody out there, if you did this, I want people to realize this. We just had the Elite Eight of the chain restaurant voting with our tech subscribers. We're down to the final four. And Chili's lost. And if you voted against Chili's and you are hearing these words right now, you are dead to me.
That vote, by the way, vindicated my entire stance on the chain restaurants. Chili's and Applebee's both going down.
I can't. It's all steakhouses. But that's, I have a whole thing. Don't worry.
And B-dubs.
B-dubs beat Chili's. It's not the time nor the place to have a 45-minute rant about how did B-dubs beat Chili's.
B-dubs is awful.
That rant will come at some point on this podcast. It's
that
just
should
not
just be
come.
The Thursday Night Live pod. It's just you and we all set our headphones down and you just go off for an hour.
Yeah.
Hey, you get to hear live.
You can just text us when you're done and we'll come back to our computers and wrap up.
If you'd like to come in a Zoom for half an hour and just listen to a man scream about Chili's, I'm going to tweet at Chili's and see if I can get some swag out of this. Because
I'm going to sit here and eat boneless wings silently.
Do you think I could get Chili's if I tweeted at both restaurants that BW3's beat Chili's? Do you think I could get their social media people who are probably millennials, who are snarky millennials, to like have a Twitter fight based on our vote?
Giordano's responded to us when I told him I could eat a full large pizza. So why not?
That's true. They're in. By the way, that was also a popular thing about the payoff for the bet. Nathan eat the pizza that Steven couldn't.
Yeah.
But
I have to eat his crust like breadsticks after he's done eating pizza like a 2-year-old.
Nathan, Steven has the crust at his house still. So here's what I want to do. I want to go through and talk about where did our minds change? What did we learn from what the guys said today? So I want to start off with the Ohio State running game. This is something that has come up. We've heard a lot about it from the texters. I wrote about it for Sunday. I thought the run game was a little clunky. I do think there's a differentiation between the run game and the running backs. I personally, I'm not really worried about the run game. I don't think the running backs are going to be that great this year. And so Steven, Ryan Day was asked about it. Josh Myers talked about it. What did you hear from those guys on Tuesday and how did it influence or not influence what you're thinking about the Ohio State run game?
I think Josh Myers agrees with the world that these running backs are not that good. Just by the way, he answered some of these questions in the sense that sometimes there would be holes and I don't understand why nobody was going through them. Some of it was because Justin Fields decided.
That's a paraphrase. That is not exactly. Josh Myers didn't say it like that. He didn't call out his teammates, but I know what you're saying.
No, he didn't. But the idea of like some, they felt like they had some times where there were some holes open, and sometimes because Justin Fields kept it, you know, because he has the ability to do that in some of those zone reads, no one ran through the holes. But there were also some other times where the holes just weren't hit as hard as maybe they should have been. And no, the line didn't have its best day, but there were some opportunities, and he didn't always feel like they took full advantage of it. That's a paraphrase, though. Yes, it's not exactly what he said.
So, Nathan, one of the names that was brought up several times, and it was pretty clear that what I thought I saw in the game, I think we talked about it right after the game, all of us saw it, that it seemed like Steel Chambers ran hard. the couple times he got the ball, it basically was put to Ryan Day, hey, might this guy enter that mix that are we maybe going to be talking more like a three-headed running back than a two-headed running back? And I didn't really go for it, I thought, Nathan.
No, in fact, his exact quote, if I can find it, was something like, we're not changing what we're doing or something like that. It's like, we're not going to change what we're doing. We are who we are. And I don't think they went into that game and thought that they had the wrong personnel based on what they had seen over the previous weeks. I do think they think those running backs could have run better. I agree with Steven. I'll say later in this podcast on the previous thing we already recorded that I felt like the same thing, that I heard some of that same thing behind what he was saying, that he didn't want Thornton under the bus, but he's also saying like, and there are things the offensive line could do better, but also the running backs maybe need to just take advantage of the holes that are there better. And Ryan Day said it too, that once you're in that second level, now it's up to you. Now you've got to do something else. You've got to make somebody miss. You've got to turn that into, you basically got to do what J.K. Dobbins did last year. You've got to find extra yards. So I agree. There are many, many, many things where you can say, we looked at week one, that sets a baseline. We hear what they say out of week one, but it's more like what we actually see on this coming Saturday, what sort of developments and adjustments were made, improvements were made between the first game and the second game.
And for the record, 11 Warriors, per 11 Warriors, the snap counts are out. Master Teague, 30, Trace Sermon, 28, Steel Chambers had 7.
Yeah. Steel Chambers basically got one drive that mattered.
Yeah. And got the ball 4 times within those 7 snaps.
All right. Another part of the run game is how often Justin Fields is going to run the ball. And part of how that happens is when he scrambles, when he holds on to the ball, and when he tries to make a play. And that came up with Ryan Day. And I thought it was an interesting conversation. It started with a question that you asked him, Stephen, about Justin Fields running the ball. So with what Ryan Day said, and the plan is that we're going to have Justin Fields on Wednesday to be able to talk more about this. But where do you stand right now with how you view Justin Fields' role running the ball, scrambling, and in called runs this year, and sort of where Ryan Day's head is at with that?
I think 12 to 15 times a game is what we should expect going forward. Obviously, the 3 of those 15 were sacks, but I think you should just expect that. While last year, it seemed like the tune was, as you asked him as a follow-up, your favorite play of Justin Fields is when he threw the ball away. That doesn't sound like the same thing Ryan Day is saying this year. It was more like, listen, it comes with the territory of Justin Fields. Sometimes he's going to take off and make a play with his legs. And a lot of times it's going to work out for the best, i.e. a touchdown run against Nebraska. The key is not putting them in second and 18 situations. It's okay to take a 1-yard sack because maybe you held on to the ball too long or you tried to make a play with your legs and it didn't work. But you shouldn't be going backwards and putting them in a situation where you can't recover from it. So it seems like, unlike last year, part of which because the guys who were behind him weren't necessarily guys who you would be okay with starting at any point, maybe because the room is also healthier, but also Justin Fields being in his second year in the program, you're a little bit okay with, you know, him, you know, I guess mixing it up a little bit and feeling like he needs to take things into his own hands sometimes.
I thought my favorite answer about the running game today, though, was Josh Myers was asked,
yeah,
how many times do you want Justin Fields to run the ball? And his answer was basically 0. He said, I want him to take negative hits. So that's a pretty big gap between those two philosophies. I sort of think, though, if he's running the ball that many times game in and game out, that may not be maybe we don't notice it being a deficiency in the offense, but I think it is one, because I think one of the reasons why he has to run the ball that much is when the running backs aren't being effective beside him.
But what if they deficiency their way to the national title? Like, I don't.
Yeah.
No, what if they deficiency their way to the same injury he had against Penn State last year, too?
That, to Ryan Day's point, that's a prime example of he should have just got rid of the ball.
But that's the line you're always walking.
It is, but I think the comfortability comes from him being in his second year and having more knowledge of that situation, more knowledge and knowing when to do what, when he needs to take off and when it can pay off and when it's not worth it. I think that's a trust you don't have in a first-year starter, but you might have it. And a guy in his second year who just showed you he's a Heisman finalist.
I don't know. It's hard. Quarterbacks get hurt in the pocket. You know, I mean, they can get hurt. The injury thing, we talk about it so much. Again, I always say it as we talk about it for 25 minutes. Like, it's my least favorite conversation because guys can get hurt on any play, in any game, at any time. It's a contact. It's a violent sport. So the idea of, like, playing scared, I mean, I say it all the time. If you're really that worried about Justin Fields getting hurt, play him in two regular season games and then tell him to be ready for the Big Ten championship game. Because you don't need Justin Fields to beat anybody on your schedule other than Penn State and Michigan. So don't take him to Illinois. Don't play him in week three against East Division leading Rutgers. Don't play him against Maryland. Because if the point is that we're going to call plays so he doesn't get hurt, or we're going to take him out so he doesn't get hurt, as soon as the game's in hand right now. The Maryland game, it's in hand right now. Go tell Justin Fields to hibernate. You don't need him. But that you're not going to do that. So then we're just talking about where you draw the line. So I think he likes to run. But I thought it was very interesting that Ryan Day at least was down the road of, I think his quote was, he might take a sack, but you'll get two or three big plays out of it by letting him run around and not just throw it away all the time. That there is a boom bust risk reward ratio here. And that if you get three big plays for every sack, that's a good ratio. You'll take it. So this is what I quibbled with last year of like, hey, Justin Fields, just get rid of it. It's like, just get rid of it. What are you talking about? He's Justin Fields. Have you seen this guy? Have you seen this guy throw? Have you seen this guy move? Have you seen this guy make plays? I don't want him throwing it away. And Ryan Day, I think the way he expressed it today, and I think he did move over the course of last season. I don't know exactly when he said that my favorite play was when he threw it away. I think it was pretty early on last season, though. And of course, he has more faith in Justin Fields now. But man, that's where you got to be. That's part of what makes Justin Fields great. Yeah, he's great in structure and in the pocket, but he can be magic pulling stuff out of nowhere. So I was very enthused. And I think, Steven, you were too, by just Ryan Day publicly expressing, which I something I think we had seen kind of emerge over the course of last year.
Yeah, I was a little, I thought, because I think on the post game pod, I talked about how three sacks is too many. Or I might have wrote it. I don't remember which one it was. But I was expecting Ryan Day to have that similar sentiment where, you know, three sacks is too many. He probably should have gotten rid of the ball a couple more times. And he was the polar opposite of that, which, I mean, that shows growth and belief in your quarterback, but also a quarterback who maybe understands, you know, it's week one, so you expect the line to get better, but also faith that your quarterback knows when it's time to freestyle and be Justin Fields and when you just need to, you know, throw it away and live to see another day.
And the texter who sends this will know what I'm talking about. There's a texter who I've corresponded with about the idea that sacks are a quarterback stat. They're not really an offensive line stat. Now, sometimes they are. You can tell if a guy gets blown up, if a guy whiffs on a block and there's a defensive lineman in the quarterback's face in half a second, that's on the offensive line. But a lot of times it's a choice that a quarterback is making to stay in the pocket and hold on to the ball. And often it is a very good choice to do that. So I don't think three sacks is too many. I don't think there is a number that's too many, because there's going to be another number on the other side of big plays resulting from holding on to the ball that I think are going to make the sacks worth it. And Ryan Day said it. He said it. My whole life at this point, in my old cranky age, all I want is for coaches to say out loud what I think. So I don't care what they think. I care what I think. And when they agree with what I think, I want to reach through the Zoom and hug them. And he did that today. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back with more thoughts of what we learned from Ryan Day and the Ohio State players on Tuesday. You're listening to the Wednesday Buckeye Talk from Cleveland.com. All right, defensive side of the ball. I'm trying to think of something specifically. Haskell Garrett was the only defender that we talked to on Tuesday. And a lot of what was asked of him, Nathan, was sort of the personal story of his amazing recovery from being shot in the face in early September. And here he is, the defensive player of the game for the Buckeyes on October 24th. So did you learn something about the defense? And then I do think, even though Haskell was reluctant to talk about it, it's worth telling our listeners a little bit about what Haskell Garrett had to say on Tuesday.
I guess the second part of that first, I thought it was interesting just to hear some of the details that, you know, like you say, he doesn't want to talk about the details of the incident that night. I tried to ask him, you know, his story is that he intervened in a fight and that's how he got shot. I'm like, tried to ask even, do you regret that? And he didn't want to go down that line either. He did, though, kind of reveal some of the details of what he has personally gone through. He didn't give me a number of like how much weight he lost or anything like that, but said that, you know, he does have to change his diet. He's on basically a liquid diet because he lost 5 teeth in this process, had to have a bone graft in his mouth, some other damage to his mouth. So he can't eat much solid food. He can eat some very soft food, but mostly he's drinking a lot of protein shakes. So, you know, imagine trying to, be a FBS FBS football player, Power Five, consisting on a diet of protein shakes. I don't think that's very easy. I guess insert your Justin Fields vegan joke here, but it is a little bit different when you're a defensive tackle, I think. So I thought that was interesting. And then also just how quickly he came back, you know, 6 days after this incident, he's meeting with Larry Johnson and going over film and stuff like that. So his determination to come back was obvious. I guess just from the fact that he did come back as quickly as he did, and you could see it in the way he played and kind of the way that he expressed himself out on the field, I thought, on Sunday. I don't know that I learned a lot about the defense, because again, just so many questions were about his experience. So we didn't get to delve too much into the defense, and we didn't get any defensive assistance today. I do think he expressed confidence in what this defensive line is going to do long-term. We'll kind of see if it's similar for them as the way it was for the offensive line. You get a week under your belt against what was a veteran unit, you know, Nebraska returning its whole offensive line. So, you know, get some experience in against him. Now you've got film to go in and compare yourself, scrutinize your performance, and make adjustments going into Saturday.
So one of the things, and I agree, we didn't learn a ton about the defense, just the way the conversations went on Tuesday. But, you know, one thing that is hanging out there, everybody knows this, is this Penn State team, the way they've played Ohio State, they're standing in the Big Ten. Steven, how would you characterize the vibe that you got from Ryan Day? Because I think it was Day mostly who talked about it, about what he's expecting from this Penn State game. And again, we have this whole second half of the podcast, which is going to be very illuminating for our listeners about Penn State. How would you describe what Ryan Day is thinking about this game right now, Steven?
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be similar to the last time he was there in 2018 when they had that comeback, because obviously there's no crowd or anything like that. And we didn't find out anything new about Chris Olave's status, but he kind of talked about the depth of the wide receiver room a little bit, which they didn't take advantage of at all against Nebraska. They just relied on Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson. But the way he talked a little bit is that they might need to rely on that a little bit more, even whether Chris Olave plays or not. And they're happy with the fact that they have that depth and they may need to rely on it. That's my biggest takeaway from that.
So we have to be very careful with this. We don't know very much about Chris Olave. And it came up, Ryan Day brushed it off when he was asked about it, but then someone smartly asked Garrett Wilson, because sometimes one of the best things to do is ask the players about how their teammates are, and they'll tell you when the coaches don't tell you. And Garrett Wilson said he was supremely confident in Chris Olave playing. He said he had talked to Chris, and he got the impression that Chris was feeling good, and he's supremely confident that he will play. Garrett Wilson is both a slot receiver and an outside receiver, but he is not a doctor. So that is not take it to the bank. But I did think if Garrett Wilson knew that Chris Olave wasn't playing Saturday, I think he might have danced around the question a little bit more. I think he might have said something more like, well, you know what? We believe in Chris, but if he can't play, next man up, you know, I'm just hoping that he gets a chance to play because he's worked so hard or something like that. And that's not what he did. He was pretty definitive that he really thinks he's going to play. So that's what we have to go on. I don't know that anybody read between the lines any more or any differently, but as we sit here, Steven, like, do you think Chris Olave is going to play?
I would, for those reasons, I would lean on the side of yes. I mean, he got up and walked off on his own, you know, will on Saturday. And unless he's in concussion protocol, I think he's going to play. But at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised if Brian Hartline is telling Julian Fleming he needs to be ready to go and have a mindset that, as the guy who rotated with Chris Olave, that he needs to have a mindset that he's going to be starting on Saturday.
Nathan, did you do any between the line reading here?
No, not necessarily. But again, the fact that he walked off the field doesn't have anything to do really with concussion protocol. And if he experiences a headache on Thursday or even tomorrow, or maybe even today, he's probably not playing Saturday. Maybe, you know what I'm saying? Like there's protocols that they have to, there's strict protocols that they go through for this for obvious reasons. Head injuries are very, very, very unpredictable. and mysterious. And I'm saying that also not as a doctor, but just as someone who's done this for a little bit. So I wrote my story saying that Chris Olave or that Garrett Wilson said that, but that I reminding people that a lot can change between now and Saturday night. I will say too, though, I as much as I think it would open up some things for Julian Fleming, as you discussed later in this other part of the podcast, I do think it also opens up a situation where maybe Garrett Wilson just becomes an outside receiver again if Chris Olave can't play, and they let Jackson Smith and Jigba have a bigger role there in the slot.
So I think there's reasons for, again, there are very curious Ohio State fans listening to this podcast right now. I guess in conclusion, at the moment, I would be optimistic about Chris Olave, but not certain.
I guess it's a fair way to say it.
Yeah. Who can ever be certain? And people were texting us over the weekend, what have you heard? What have you heard? What have you heard? And we just had not really heard anything. So this was the update. This is how Ryan Day is going to be. It is not a surprise. He is much closer to the vest about injuries than Urban Meyer was, which is just, I don't know whether that's good or bad. It just is. So I'm not surprised that we didn't get like a full update. And then they have the injury report that they release on Friday, you know, sometime mid-morning on Fridays. And that will really tell us for sure what the plan is going to be about Chris Olave and Penn State on Saturday. So we're going to get ready here for this Penn State crossover with Bob Flounders and Greg Pickle. But before we go, Steven, is there anything else from the discussion specifically on Tuesday? We did get into some good Garrett Wilson stuff, but is there anything specifically on Tuesday that you wanted to talk about that we haven't covered yet?
Just kind of back on Justin Fields is running and that constant evolution of these guys trying to get used to him in scramble drill. I asked Garrett Wilson about a goal line play where it, from where we're sitting at, it looks like he's open and he's got his hand in his air waving the way wide receivers do when they know they're open. And I asked him about maybe is there communication after that when you've got a quarterback who saw green, who, as he said, saw green grass. And so he took off and Garrett Wilson thought he was open. It was a quick, he said it was a quick conversation, but it's not a long conversation or any type of argument or anything. They just communicate what Justin saw versus what Garrett saw. And they kind of move on from there. And so, I mean, scramble drill is what ended the season last year because a receiver thought Justin Fields was in scramble drill and he wasn't in scramble drill. So that's something to consistently keep an eye on throughout the year is, you know, how that evolves with Garrett, with Chris, with the freshmen, with the tight ends, even how they evolve, especially now that Justin Fields has been kind of let off the leash here to run a little bit more, how they respond to that and continue to grow in that space.
Again, Haskell Garrett, Garrett Wilson. And I said I was looking for Wilson Haskell. If a person existed named Wilson Haskell, it'd be another way to finish the circle here because we had Haskell Garrett, Garrett Wilson today. And Josh Myers and Ryan Day. Anything, Nathan, that stuck in your mind that we haven't covered?
There's something actually I want to go back to before today, and that was the linebacker discussion we were having after the game on Saturday. I don't know that there was a lot of conversation about that today, but among the seven defensive players named as champions were two linebackers, and one of them was Tuff Borland from this game. So again, it just kind of reinforces that what we are seeing sometimes in real time does, and the reactions that we sometimes make off of that either don't mesh with the way that the coaches scrutinize these games or don't matter in the way that the coaches scrutinize these games and that they look at things from at a different depth or with a different perspective.
And also they know exactly what they're expecting from every guy on mm-hmm. every play. And sometimes I think it's possible that we see like Tuff Borland chasing somebody and not catching him and think, well, why didn't he catch him? And it's like, well, it actually wasn't his deal to catch him on that play. Like Tuff Borland was supposed to take care of this gap and he did. And then it was like, oh man, the guy's over there because somebody else didn't do their job. And now Tuff Borland's chasing him. And all we see is Tuff Borland looking slow. And
there's a play in this game where he is kind of drifting away from play and then the run goes back to the left side. So then he comes back over to try to make a tackle. Proctor Hooker, I can't remember, is coming down. They almost like collides. They almost kind of take each other out of play. It might've been on the McCaffrey run. It was on a big run early in the game. And so then the question is like, is that a big mistake that Tuff Borland made where he's like over pursuing and knocking a guy out? Or is that a safety who was not where he was supposed to be on that play? And Tuff Borland didn't think he was going to be there as he was trying to come over and make the tackle. Those are things that a coach who designed that play and is grading that play knows better than we are going to know just from watching it, even on the second time through, I think.
And Ryan Day did mention, I think he said specifically about Marcus Hooker, like he settled down after the first series or something. Mm-hmm. Right. We saw some of the, a little bit of loose tackling, a little bit of loose play, not being the eraser on the back end early on, which again, for a safety making his first career start was not a shock, but those are some things that I think can calm down a little bit with this defense. And I do just think overall with the defense, even though it wasn't discussed a ton on Tuesday, I think there are just some things that were game one, new starters, new positions, shaking out the rust, shaking out some of the, got to anticipate the play a little bit better, a little fundamentals that I think will improve. So, okay. This is the Blue White Breakdown crew. They have a new podcast for PennLive.com where I think they're going three times a week. It's the Buckeye Talk version for Penn State. They just didn't call it Knit Talk. Like, probably doesn't sound as good. Nittany Lion Talk. Knit, like, could you call it Wow Talk?
I would have called it that. Shooting the Nittany.
Shooting. Oh, I like that. Yeah.
No, I don't. I regret having said it.
I'll email those guys back and say Nathan has a name change for you guys.
Okay.
So we'll do that in the second half. And then again, I think for the tech subscribers, if you want to send them in, I think we'll do rapid fire, big Thursday rapid fire to really preview this game. You know how it is. Sometimes if the opponent's stinky, we don't spend a lot of time on podcasts talking specifically about the opponent. But yeah, Penn State lost to Indiana, but they're not stinky. They're not as good as Ohio State, but I think they're worth talking about. So we're going to do that for the next 40 minutes with Bob Flounders and Greg Pickle. And then when we're done with those guys, we'll be back to wrap it up on Buckeye Talk.
All right. We have a very special edition, guys, of Blue White Breakdown this week. I'm Bob Flounders, joined as always by Greg Pickle, but we have some special guests.
Because you are also joined by the Buckeye Talk crew, Doug LaMaurice and Nathan Baird, on this special Advanced Communications crossover episode.
It's awesome. I'm excited. I think it's going to be, you know, Penn State, Ohio State, going to be a very interesting game. It's going to be at Beaver Stadium, but there won't be a whiteout. And both teams come into the game, guys, probably, you know, with a little bit different mindsets after what happened on Saturday. Let's just real quick, Greg, I hope you're well. I hope Lola is well, the golden retriever, your golden retriever. But let's just get to our guests right away, Doug and Nathan. We have a lot of questions about Ohio State and where they're at, but also I'm sure you guys want to know some stuff about 0-1 Penn State. But, you know, Doug, I've known you for a long time. We've done these before. I'm excited. And even though Penn State's 0-1, I think it's going to be a pretty interesting game.
I think it feels like, Nathan, that's what everybody's assuming from Ohio State, that, yes, we know Penn State lost, but we talked on our previous podcast how many yards Penn State put up, how Penn State doesn't seem afraid of Ohio State like a lot of teams do. And we just got off with Ryan Day, and Nathan, it felt like that's what Ryan Day was indicating, that they're expecting the regular kind of Penn State brouhaha.
Yeah, I think, you know, much like we talked about with me when I was doing my AP ballot, I think if you look at that game and how it unfolded, you take a lot away from the way that Penn State outplayed Indiana more than you take away from the fact that there was this, some mistakes made by Penn State, to be sure, but then this also this controversial ending to the game that gives Indiana the win. I think if I'm a coach watching that game, I still come away with a lot of things that I'm concerned about as it relates to Penn State and the things that they did well in that game, more so than maybe just a couple of the dumb things that shot themselves in the foot that cost them the win there.
That said, all of our Ohio State tech subscribers just want to know when James Franklin's going to get fired. So, so you know where people's heads are here in Ohio.
Yeah. And Greg, you can address this, you know, the way that regulation played out for Penn State, there were some people that are very unhappy with, how Penn State kind of forgot to do something very important at the end of that game, that they could have ended it in regulation. And the fan base, I think, is pretty worked up over that decision.
Yeah, there's a lot of people upset, Bob, that Devin Ford didn't simply slide down and really would have put Penn State in a position to run out the clock, or at least a good chunk of it. There may have been 10, 15, 6 seconds left, if that. And instead, he goes in to score. You could see Penn State receiver Jahan Dotson yelling at him not to do that. You could see Ford immediately thought that it was a bad idea for him to score there. And instead, it was too late by the time he put all those pieces together. So Indiana then drives the length of the field, scores, and wins it in overtime on what, you know, is a controversial call, but one James Franklin felt could have went either way and therefore understood why it stood on the field. So, yeah, moving forward, there's plenty of questions still about this Penn State team. I think Ohio State probably certainly answered more any questions it had in a much better way than what Penn State was able to do, but they're obviously still excited for the chance to play Ohio State, knowing that, as our good buddy Dave Jones put it before the Indiana game, that a loss against the Hoosiers would not be the end of Penn State's chances at a Big Ten title run if they could find a way to overcome Ohio State. It's obviously a pretty big challenge, and they're already, what, about 12-point underdogs?
I mean, that's right, that Penn State runs the table, Penn State makes the playoff. I mean, with the way everything's so screwed up, I mean, same for Ohio State, but I don't know that anything changed, right? For not that it has no effect to lose to Indiana, but it's like, all you got to do is win out. You're fine. Just win out. No big deal.
Yeah. All you got to do is you got to beat the team that many people believe is the number one team in the country once they get rolling. That's all you got to do. And by the way, you got to do it without your All-American linebacker, your two best running backs, and your special teams better play a lot better, or you might be in huge trouble at Beaver Stadium. That's all you got to do.
Yeah. So, and you've got to overcome this thing. And I do want to ask this kind of off the top for you guys, because we have a couple questions from our Ohio State Tech subscribers to ask our Penn State experts here. And as I said, I have three questions that are all on the same lines. It's just interesting. I don't know if what, it's always interesting what the thought process is of the actual fan base versus what people think on the outside, what the thought process is. Does it match up? We have this from the 513. At what point is James Franklin on the hot seat for not being a great in-game coach? His recruiting has carried him for years where he is elite, but he has cost them a number of games with his in-game coaching. We have another similar question from the 801. How does the fan base feel about Franklin? Seems morale and recruiting have dipped this year. Is the program beginning to sour on him? Or is that just sentiment from outside observers? And then from the 678, what's the likelihood that James Franklin gets fired after this year? It feels like game management and recruiting have dipped this year. And is Penn State wanting more someone like PJ Fleck or Luke Fickell who could slide right in? That is where Ohio State people are with the program that by far has challenged Ohio State more than any other program in this conference. But yet, that's what Ohio State fans are thinking. Is there any truth to any of that among actual Penn State fans?
Oh, they're pretty riled up, Greg. I want to get Greg's perspective on this. My theory is a lot of those questions, I think, are being asked by the Penn State fan base. But the issues go hand in hand, right? So it's great that Penn State has played Ohio State off its feet most of the times they've played the last few years. But the other way you can look at it is they've blown two double-digit leads in the second half to the Buckeyes. And, you know, last year's game was 28-17. It felt like Ohio State probably played their C game and that they just turned the ball over too much. But it's – so they lose the close games, Greg, and then you hear players that Penn State is targeting say, I want to go to a school that's going to, A, develop me, and B, I want to play in the playoff. And, you know, if you're not going to beat Ohio State, none of that's going to happen. So I think you're starting to see that affect Penn State's recruiting.
Yeah, I do think that part of the issue that Penn State faces, and I do think if you polled a majority of the Penn State football fan community, I do think a majority would still be behind James Franklin, still believe he's the right guy to lead this program. But there is certainly a sense of impatience coming from a lot of people, especially the ones who maybe stood behind James Franklin the most so far, and just the sense that it always feels like once the season arrives, and now the recruiting has not gone well this year, so it's already felt that way, but they've at least been able to point back to the pandemic and no visits and things like that, and you can rationalize and explain it if you really want to, but you know, there always feels like once game day gets here, you just wonder what the mistake might be this week, or what thing could go wrong that shouldn't go wrong or doesn't go wrong at the other quote unquote elite programs around the country. And I think that's where a lot of the frustration comes. I don't think Penn State's close to firing James Franklin. I don't know if he's on any even close to being on any kind of hot seat. But I do think that if you would talk to the people who support him most, I think there is a growing sense that it's time to clean up some of this stuff. 7 years is long enough. Right. You have maybe the most talented roster you've had, even without, well, that was before Micah Parsons left. Noah Kane and Journey Brown missed time, and some other guys are out of there too. So, you know, but they still have a ton of talent, certainly much more than when James Franklin got here. And yet some of the same coaching mistakes he first made, especially on game days when he got to Penn State, are still taking place. And I think that's starting to really wear on the Penn State fan base year in and year out.
Greg, do you have a question? Can we give a question to Nathan and Doug? And you got one or two for maybe for those guys?
Yeah, so our tech subscribers also were interested in getting your guys' opinion. And they basically just want to know this. Do you think there's any chance Penn State can keep it within 12.5 points and keep this game respectable going into the fourth quarter? There's a lot of negativity, I would say, from this group, or at least the ones who got back to us when we queried them for podcast questions, that they feel very pessimistic about Penn State being able to run with Ohio State based on what you saw in Lincoln and then also, or against Nebraska, and then also what you saw from whatever you've been able to catch of Penn State, Indiana. Where are you at on that this early in the week?
So just as a point of information, sports gambling is legal in Pennsylvania now. It is not yet legal in Ohio, and I can tell people just want gambling advice from us. So we know what's up, tech subscribers. Nathan, why don't you take this one?
Well, I mean, Penn State played within 11 points of Ohio State last year, and that was, I think, a more top-to-bottom talented Ohio State roster, especially at this point of the year compared to where that team was at that point of the year, Chase Young coming back for that game and everything. So certainly it's plausible that they could play within 12.5 points. You've also got an Ohio State team here that didn't look great in some aspects of the game against Nebraska. Don't let the score fool you too much. Kind of the opposite, I guess, of what happened in the Penn State-Indiana game. But, like, you know, some ways that the running game was not quite there yet. Some ways that defensively there are some issues that they have to clean up, as any team, I guess, would have after week one. But certainly earlier in that game, they looked pretty vulnerable. It's 17-14 late in the first half, and Nebraska has the ball with a chance to go down and tie or take the lead. So it wasn't a complete boat race the whole day. So I think there's a possibility that Ohio State or that Penn State could play within there. I think kind of what you said, though, I think plays into this is that the turnovers, I think, have been an issue. They've been a factor in this game the last couple of years, and one of the reasons why Penn State kept it close, maybe especially last season. Ohio State gave some points away or left some points on the field because of turnovers. And so if that happens again, that obviously makes it much more likely that Penn State can either spring an upset or at least be within reach of it late in this game.
And that was something Ryan Day, when we spoke with him on Tuesday, Ryan Day brought up the turnovers on his own, that obviously they were such a big deal last year. But he said, if we keep turning it over like that against Penn State, we're not going to win.
Yeah, you know, one other problem, guys, and I'm sorry to cut you off, Bob, but this was another question we got, too, is that, you know, it almost feels like there was one suggestion we got that it might be time for that script to flip and Penn State to have the turnover bug in this series. The Lions turned it over three times against Indiana, one special teams, two on offense. So the question that and kind of follows this line of thinking is, where is Ohio State in terms of being a turnover team, both on offense and defense, comparatively to years past, either under Ryan Day or before he took over?
Justin Fields doesn't throw picks, man. Like, Justin Fields, for being as dynamic and kind of a game-breaking talent like he is, he's very accurate and he makes really good decisions. So that part of it is hard. But he got loose last year. He fumbled on the goal line last year. He fumbled another time last year. Again, I don't think that's a huge part of his game, but there's a great debate with Ohio State fans right now and the Ohio State coaching staff of, like, how much Justin Fields should run. Their running backs aren't as good as J.K. Dobbins last year. And so he ran it 15 times against Nebraska. They keep saying they don't want to run him. They all reinforce that again on Tuesday. I think they're going to end up with him having to run. He's going to choose to scramble at times. He's going to choose to keep it in the zone read. And so I think he's going to have the ball in his hand. So again, he put it on the ground twice last year against Penn State. I don't think he's going to throw picks, Nathan. I think you were agreeing with that. But, you know, their running backs are new. And I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know if Penn State's going to go after it and be trying to strip the ball out. But Nathan, Ohio State could put the ball on the ground maybe in a game like this.
Sure. And for the Penn State fans who are listening to this, Fields threw three interceptions all of last year, and two of them were in the national championship game, including the one on the last
semifinal.
Play of the game.
Semifinal.
Or the semifinal. You're right. Right. The playoff semifinal on the last play of the game. So that gives you some idea of just how rare those are for him. And he was 20 of 21 passing in the first week. So, but I agree. I think from it's the running game where Ohio State's more vulnerable to turnovers, and small sample size. We don't really, I don't think, know, have a great grasp on these starting running backs and how they hold on to the ball. I really don't remember much from Master Teague in that capacity last year, but he was definitely the secondary guy after J.K. Dobbins. So a lot of times he was getting a lot of his yards at times when, frankly, we were already writing about what had already happened in that game. And Trey Sermon's new. Now, neither one of them put the ball on the ground in the first week. The only fumble that Ohio State had was when Chris Olave took a hard shot on a reception and fumbled in the process, and he had to leave the game. So we're waiting to hear what his status will be for sure this week. But I agree with Doug that I think that if Penn State's going to take it away from Ohio State, it's going to more likely come in the running game or maybe in some kind of special teams miscue, because Garrett Wilson did have trouble with that last year. As dynamic as he potentially is in the run game as the punt returner, he definitely got loose with it a few times. His feet and his hands moving before too soon or taking his eye off the ball. So that's something to keep an eye on.
So this is a question again from our tech subscribers at Ohio State that relates to this for Greg and Bob from the 614. How will Penn State scheme defensively for the Ohio State passing attack? How can Penn State slow down Justin Fields and these receivers? That was the thing that worked best for Ohio State in the opener. Bob and Greg, can Penn State, either with a pass rush or with good coverage in the secondary, try to slow down this Ohio State passing offense?
Well, I would say I think Ohio State's got Penn State in a little bit of a bind in this game. And the reason I say that is James Franklin knows the difference in last year's game was Justin Fields' legs. If you just look at the plays he made on third and fourth down, when they had Micah Parsons in the game, it's third and five. He gets 14 yards on a quarterback draw. It's third and 12. He runs a quarterback draw for 17 yards. It's fourth and five, and Ohio State's driving a quarterback draw for 22 yards. They just, and this is with a pretty good linebacker group, they just couldn't contain him, and he also can extend plays with his feet. But if you get worried about that too much, they have those wideouts on the outside. I just don't know with a linebacker group that is very untested, and now that they're going to be missing a starter in the first half, Jesse Luketa will not play because of a targeting call. I just don't know if you're Brent Pry, Greg. I don't know what the priority is. I mean, because on the one hand, Penn State should be better covering the receivers, because Tariq Castro Fields and Joey Porter Jr. looked very good against Indiana, but Ohio State isn't Indiana, Greg. They have some fantastic wideouts. I just think that eventually the dam is going to break on Saturday, because you can play great defense 80% of the game against a team like Ohio State. But with that skill and that speed and Justin Fields being able to do so many things, you just got to mess up on two or three plays and it's the ball game.
Yeah, I think Brent Pry's priority, Bob, should be to make sure Penn State's offense is very confident during practice this week. I don't know if he adds some different guys on the scout team or what he has to do, but make sure those guys are as ready for game day as they can be, because they're going to have to score points to win this game. There's just no question about it. You have to do that against Ohio State in most years, and certainly now. You mentioned Jesse Luketa will miss the first half because of a targeting ejection at Indiana. They're already starting two, a young guy and Brandon Smith and Ellis Brooks inside and out. Now Lance Dixon will get called on more. I didn't think the linebackers were bad against Indiana, Bob, but you could tell that they were working together as a unit for the first time. And if they get out of their assignments and if they get out of their gaps and they do it early and they do it often, and if the defensive line cannot, there were a lot of close calls in Bloomington, Bob, where Shaka Toney, the Penn State defensive end, or Antonio Shelton, the defensive tackle, were very, very close to finishing off Michael Penix Jr. And they were just a step late. And that was the same thing happened quite a few times with Justin Fields and some of these other Ohio State offensive players over the year. That's one thing about Brent Pry's defense. It has some awesome stats, but there are times when they are just a little bit too, one second, half second late, and it's allowed other teams to make big plays against them. And the other problem too is, if you didn't get to watch the game, there are at least three or four instances where either Michael Penix Jr. missed a wide open receiver down the field, or in the case of his tight end Peyton Hendershot, the fourth quarter, he just dropped it. And, Ohio State may suffer some drops, but I can guarantee you this. If Ohio State and Justin Fields have some of the, with or without Olave, if he plays or if he doesn't, if they have some of these receivers as open as some of Indiana's guys ran free, I don't think Justin Fields is going to miss them like Michael Penix did. And then that would be a different conversation had that not been the case at Indiana.
I'm curious about this, and you brought his name up, Greg, and this isn't from a texter, but it's from a texter named Doug. I do get my own texts because sometimes my ego is so huge. I want to write something and then read what I just wrote.
The arguments he gets in with himself are probably just epic. It's just him in his basement yelling for nonstop for 2 hours, slightly different voices.
Flounders knows. He knows what I'm like. The idea of Shaka Toney being the best pass rusher in this game, which I don't know if we go back, Chase Young, Nick Bosa, Joey Bosa, when has that ever been true? We have saw it with Ohio State. They didn't get a great pass rush. They have a defensive end rotation with five guys. We're kind of waiting to see who emerges there. There isn't a Chase Young kind of guy that's apparent right now, but I'd like to get Nathan on that, where he thinks the defensive ends for Ohio State are going to be by week two for this game. But then Greg and Bob, like, how much can Shaka Toney or this Penn State pass rush, do you think, have an effect on Justin Fields? Bob, if you guys want to go first with that.
Yeah, so I just think that the danger with Fields is Shaka Toney and Jason Awe, the other starter. Jason Awe didn't have a great stat line against Indiana, but he was in the backfield the whole game. This is a first-year starter who might be literally the greatest winter conditioning athlete in Penn State football history. He's the 260-pounder that runs – like 4-4. It's obscene what he can do, but he looked like a football player against Indiana. Didn't finish. The problem when you pass rush against Justin Fields is if you get too far up the field, he's going to go out. He's going to cut right inside. And then it's him against the young linebackers and it's going to be 25 yards. I just think they have to be very disciplined when you rush a guy like Justin Fields, because he's such a great athlete. Sean Clifford is an athlete, but he's not an athlete like Justin Fields. I would expect, even though Penn State's got a pretty good left tackle, the right tackle was worked over by Chase Young last year, Will Fries. I think if you're going to attack Penn State's offensive line, that's kind of where you want to put your best pass rushers, probably the right over the right tackle. And you know pretty much where Sean Clifford's going to be, pretty much. He's just not quite as athletic as Justin Fields, and they ran. He got hurt in the Ohio State game last year, but really he was hurt going into the game. And they talked about not running him nearly as much this year, but now the running game, they don't really have an inside runner. Devin Ford's more of an outside guy. Clifford ran the ball 17 times against the Hoosiers, and eventually it's going to catch up to him. You just can't run the ball that much between the tackles in the Big Ten and then hope to be, you know, upright for late November. I do expect Penn State's offensive line to have some issues, I think, against the Buckeyes pass rush, because I know they have great athletes. And I think Nebraska's quarterbacks are a little bit more, they had a couple of them, didn't they, that are a little bit more mobile, I think, than maybe Sean Clifford.
That Jason Awe name for Ohio State fans, that's the guy Ohio State was in on right until the end in the recruiting process. And so I think it's had even maybe a better career, at least from here, than maybe people expected. That guy was a big time recruit, but to hear you talk about him that way, not that, you know, Ohio State should be fine without him, but Nathan, we sort of talked about that, you know, what they did or didn't do in week one. Nathan, how do you think these Ohio State defensive ends will play against Penn State and getting after Sean Clifford?
Well, I'm really curious to see it. We didn't get to ask Ryan Day, or I guess we had the opportunity, but nobody really did ask him about that defensive end rotation today. If you had told me going into week one that Jonathan Cooper was going to play twice as many snaps as Zach Harrison, I would have assumed that there would have been some kind of an injury situation involved. And as far as we know, there wasn't. That was kind of a surprise. I mean, some of the most more dynamic, talented guys, I mean, he's the number one example, I suppose. He was fifth in snaps among the defensive ends. So I think that's something that we want to see progress as the season goes on. If that was just a one game thing as they were trying something, or if for some reason he is farther back in that rotation, because he's a guy that came in as a, you know, a major national recruit, and this is kind of supposed to be his breakout season. I do agree with Bob that this is a different matchup for Ohio State. I know Clifford has some running ability too, but he's not the same kind of quarterback as Adrian Martinez is. So I think that's the other thing that makes it a little bit hard to predict, is there are situational things here. You know, for instance, I don't know if Ohio State really ever went to its traditional Rushman package on Saturday, which is where they throw three or four, sometimes even for the three technique, throw four true defensive ends up there and just have them going at it, or bring we thought they might bring Baron Browning down, or their Sam linebacker down more as a pass rusher, something they did on occasion last year. Never happened at all, I don't think, on Saturday from what I remember. So there's I think this is one position group for Ohio State that is still maybe the most up in the air to me, that I don't know. I don't have a great read on them going into week two. I need some more information before I can really tell exactly what Ohio State's trying to get done with that group.
Greg, I wanted to – something that you and I noticed in the Indiana game, I think could really play out in the Ohio State game, and that is Penn State's wide receiver group is A, a little bit young, B, a little bit unproven, and it didn't really seem like they were getting open very easily. I'm not talking about Pat Freiermuth, the tight end. It just seemed like they struggled to get open, and Sean Clifford had to pull the ball down, or he wanted to throw it, but nobody was open. And it wasn't until late in the game, I think, when IU got a little tired because they were on the field, that some guys began to break free. I know that Ohio State always has good corners, and I know Sean Wade is back, and I'm sure they have some other guys that are four or five stars that will only get better as the season progresses. But Greg, what is your level? And maybe we can direct this to our Ohio State guys. What is the level of concern that Ohio State's just going to line up and press man and say, good luck trying to get any separation, and then they're just going to go after Clifford?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be up to Kirk Ciarrocca to find a way to, number one, get a rushing attack going and have it be more consistent without the first two guys who were on the depth chart 3 weeks ago. And Journey Brown, who has an undisclosed medical condition, could come back, maybe won't. We don't know yet. Definitely doesn't sound like he's playing this week. And then Noah Cain, who is out now for the season after suffering an undisclosed injury that appeared to be lower body early, very early, about, what, five plays into the opener at Indiana. So he has to work with that. Kirk Ciarrocca does, the first year Penn State offensive coordinator. But yeah, I mean, and I'll throw this back to Doug and Nate then. And there's always a couple of guys that fans may not have heard of from recruiting or whatever. Now, in the case of Ohio State, when you look at the depth chart, I think everyone's heard of Julian Fleming. So that may not be quite a good segue for you guys. But, you know, for Ohio State fans, there's two young receivers, first year guys, Keandre Lambert-Smith, Parker Washington, both played a pretty nice role and did a nice job for Penn State at certain parts of this game. But you could tell each of those guys was just starting to get his feet wet. Washington had a big catch late. You know, Jahan Dotson is the veteran and leader of that group. But if Penn State's going to win this game, guys, or even be in the conversation for, you know, winning it down the stretch, they will need those two to get open and be more consistent earlier and often, because they have some veterans. You know, Cam Sullivan Brown's one, Daniel George is one, who I think a lot of people expected those guys to take a bigger step forward going into this season, and it hasn't happened yet. So if Ohio State does line up that way, and they'd be very smart to, Penn State's going to have to rely on its youngsters, and I don't know if Ohio State has anybody else like that, but they're going to have to rely on their youngsters to really help lead this offense down the field.
So we know, as Bob mentioned, Sean Wade is back, has a case to among the best defensive backs, among the best cornerbacks in the country. But the other guys there in the secondary for Ohio State are young, and they last year did run a mix of cover one and cover three. We're still kind of curious exactly how that's going to emerge this year with Kerry Combs as a first-year defensive coordinator. But Nathan wrote about this guy coming off the game. Seven Banks is a guy. He's a third-year player. A lot of young defenders from the class of 2018 for Ohio State getting a shot this year. Nathan, how did you think Seven Banks played? And when we talk about, hey, if Greg and Bob are saying Penn State's got to be able to get open and throw, do you think Seven Banks and some of these other young OSU corners are up to the task of not letting that happen?
Well, it's actually more accurate to say that they're inexperienced in the secondary than they are young, because Seven Banks is a third-year guy. Marcus Williamson, who is their starting slot corner now, is a senior. Cam Brown is another guy who's a third-year guy. Tyree Johnson, another corner who's on the bench, is a third-year guy. Josh Proctor and Malik Harrison, the safeties, are third-year guys. So they're guys who've been kind of waiting in the wings behind these guys who are in the NFL now, the two first-round starting corners that were picked last year, and Jordan Fuller is having a nice start despite his low draft status for the Rams. So I thought it was a good first game, or a good kind of, you know, that whole defense is kind of setting a baseline in the first week. I thought you saw good and bad from that group, but they need playmakers on defense. Seven Banks showed that might be something he can be. Had a 55-yard scoop and score for a touchdown in the game after a Pete Werner, one of the other veteran linebackers, knocked it loose. So they've got to find a way to come up with some plays like that over the course of a game and over a course of a season. That was really the only instance from the first week. I still think that's what still needs to maybe come out of this defense a little bit more. But again, some of it, even though they've got some guys who are back as starters on defense, some of them are switching spots, especially at this linebacker group. So 9 of the 11 spots have had a first-time starter on Saturday at that position. So I expect to see some growth, not just between week one and week two for this defense, but as the season goes along. That was, the defense had a higher, had farther to go to reach its ceiling, but it might still be a pretty good ceiling.
Just a slip of the tongue by Nathan. He said Malik Harrison. It's Marcus Hooker, who's the deep safety, who's the young guy. Yep. Just and for Penn State fans who don't know, he is the younger brother of Malik Hooker, who tore up the world.
Hence the slip up.
And so my question is this, as it relates to that, it's interesting. We've talked about this a lot. I'm sure you guys have too. Graham Mertz at Wisconsin, what he did in week one, and unfortunately now out with COVID. But Joe Milton at Michigan, what he did in week one. It's always been a question in the Big Ten, what kind of quarterback league is it? And it just feels like if you're going to beat the big boys, your quarterback better play pretty good. Does Sean Clifford have it in him, running and throwing, to play the kind of game that you might need to play to beat Ohio State? Is that in Sean Clifford somewhere? And if it's in there, how deep is it buried?
I mean, I just think that if you just look, since James Franklin has been at Penn State, they've played, I think I got this right, they played six times and Penn State's 1-5. And the year that Penn State won, you know, it was really a defensive game. Ohio State led late, but neither quarterback really distinguished themselves. And I think it was part of the reason was Penn State's pass rush in the crowd really limited what Ohio State could do in that game. But Trace McSorley, I don't think, was particularly great in that game. It was really a defensive game. But every other game, Ohio State's quarterback – I thought was the difference in every other game, whether it was JT Parrott in overtime in 2014, whether Cardale Jones starts the game in 2015, JT Barrett, who's still relatively healthy, relieves him. And he has an amazing game at the Horseshoe. 2017, he was the best player on the field in the fourth quarter. You know, 2018, Haskins gets his act together in the second half and they kill Penn State with underneath throws and broken tackles, but Haskins makes the throws. And, you know, last year we talked about what Justin Fields was able to do, even though he made some mistakes, the plays he was able to make with his legs. I think that Sean Clifford had a very rough first half against Indiana. This isn't a more athletic defense that he's going to see. Greg, I would expect him to play a little bit better, especially because he couldn't play really very well in last year's game because he was hurt. But he's just not at Justin Fields' level. And when you look at this game, it's hard to see the formula for Penn State to win without their All-American linebacker. And when they have a good quarterback, but a quarterback that I don't think is nearly as good as Justin Fields.
Yeah, I don't know how you could disagree. I mean, Clifford at Indiana, 24-35, 238, three touchdowns, two interceptions. There were moments, you know, he climbed a pocket late. I believe it was Washington who he hit down the sideline. There were moments in that Indiana game where he looked good. I mean, he looked like a guy who maybe is not going to be at that level, but could at least be serviceable enough right below that level to get you in a game like this. But you know, the two interceptions were brutal. He sailed both of them. They were not particularly close to where he wanted them to go. And again, his receiver struggled to get open. I think that's worth noting too. Some of those completions, he just had nowhere to go with it. And I think the bigger concern is Indiana at times forced Penn State and Sean Clifford to run when they weren't designed quarterback runs. And they already had decided they were passing based off the RPO look. So he got beat up last year and in fact was so beat up that he had to leave the Ohio State game early. And remember, Will Levis came in because he was in a lot of those same situations where he was running a lot. He was taking too many hits. He was spending too much time outside of the pocket, getting hit by two guys and not getting 2 yards. So I think that's another concern for Penn State. Even if Clifford does play better than what some of the games that we've seen him play, is are they going to be able to hold up enough, both protection-wise? You mentioned that it questions about the Ohio State defensive line. Penn State has a veteran line. Maybe the protection's better this year. But if the offense doesn't click and the run game doesn't get going and the receivers don't get open, it could look a lot like what the problems were in Columbus. Yeah, Bob, you're not winning too many games when you don't do those things. It could look a lot like that Columbus game last year where he just took too many hits early, and that really impacted what he was able to do as both a runner and a thrower. So I guess the long and short way of answering your question is we haven't seen it yet, at least not consistently. I'm not sure we saw it much on last Saturday, and they're just going to need more out of him if they want to go and beat Ohio State, even at a family-only filled Beaver Stadium.
The last question that we had from our tech subscribers, I think, is a nice wide open question, and we can maybe answer it on our side too. But from the 937, who are the unknown gems on Penn State's roster that are going to give Ohio State fits on Saturday? I think it's always valuable for fan bases to be like, who's the guy that I don't know that when I watch the game, I'm going to be like, oh, that guy on the opposing team. So who are some of those one or two Penn State guys?
All right, I'll start. I think I really like those questions too, because I just think that's I would imagine Penn State fans are trying to figure out, well, who are the Ohio State guys not named Justin Fields and Olave, and you know, who are the guys that are going to get us, you know, this year. For me, the guy that really impressed me in week one, making his first start, he's got a famous last name, Joey Porter Jr., the son of the former Steeler linebacker. He redshirted last year. They played other guys over him at corner because they felt like, even though he was a physical specimen, he wasn't quite ready for all that goes into playing corner in terms of knowing the defense. This guy is almost 6'3". He's 200 pounds. He can run. He's got very long arms. And he was really, really good, I thought, against Indiana. Him and Tariq Castro-Fields, they really did a nice job, I thought. Indiana had some pretty good receivers, and they were pretty quiet until the very late stages. They only had 200 yards. But Joey Porter Jr. going against the Ohio State wideouts, I'm very anxious to see if he can continue to play strong and can also, you know, he doesn't seem like he's going to back down. He relishes man-to-man coverage, but you're talking about different types of athletes, I think, when you talk about those Ohio State wideouts. They're just terrific. I know last year they made a couple of great catches in that game, and I'm sure they'll do it again. But Greg, for me, it's Joey Porter Jr., excuse me, a redshirt freshman corner. Is there anyone that maybe Ohio State fans should know about at Penn State in your mind?
Yeah, keep an eye on Adisa Isaac, a defensive end who is very talented and maybe has he's like 1A and 1B if always their most explosive freakish athlete on the defensive line, not to take any away from Shaka Tony, but those guys just have a twitch that you haven't seen before. If always 1A, the Isaac's 1B, and they'll put him in certain situations to try and get more of a pass rush. And he's a guy who, if he shows up, it's probably going to be via a splash play. So keep an eye out for him. On the other side of the ball, we mentioned the young two receivers, Parker Washington and Keandre Lambert-Smith. But Bob, I'll go with running back Kevon Lee. Penn State's going to get plenty of work for Devin Ford early in this game, I think. But I thought of the two freshman running backs, Lee was just a little bit more impressive than fellow Florida four-star Keziah Holmes in the absence of Noah Kane. And now with him and Brown expected to be out for this Ohio State game, I don't think they're going to completely – it'll be, you know, maybe 70-20-10 they'll split the carries, something like that. You're going to see mostly Devin Ford, but I think Kevon Lee could be a guy who could get some more run and impress in this game. And that wouldn't have been the case at this time last week.
Nathan, who's a guy for the Ohio State side that we could inform the Penn State listeners about in the same way?
Yeah, you know, having already mentioned the defensive backs, I would say we were talking about the pass rush earlier in Ohio State needing to kind of conjure one. I would throw out Tyreek Smith as someone who, he came in after Chase Young, and now they're recruiting these other big time guys, including Zach Harrison, who I mentioned earlier, and behind him. So he's kind of in that middle slot, and I don't know if he always got the fanfare, but the talent would seem to be there. He's just another guy that they're sort of waiting on to kind of just make that jump and really get up and be one of the better, you know, pass rushing forces in the Big Ten. And I think it could happen this season. It's just a matter of him going out and kind of asserting himself. That's a guy I would keep an eye on who could maybe have a kind of a breakthrough game.
And again, for Penn State fans, just like Ohio State was in on Jason Awe, Tyreek Smith is a guy from Cleveland that Penn State thought they were getting, at least for a decent chunk of his recruitment.
Right.
So it's always interesting and happens with Ohio State and Penn State when you have these recruiting battles. We don't know about Chris Olave, the number one receiver who went out with an injury. Ryan Day was very close to the vest in talking about him on Tuesday. Garrett Wilson, their other receiver, said, yeah, I'm super confident he'll play. I talked to Chris. He should be fine. But I do think it's interesting. There's a true freshman named Jackson Smith Najigba who made a crazy catch in the back of the end zone on Saturday and got his foot down. Garrett Wilson got moved to the slot this year, but he played outside last year. When they go 12 personnel, they have Wilson outside. If something happens and Olave can't play on Saturday, I think Garrett Wilson will play outside a lot more. And I think Jackson Smith Najigba, who's their backup slot receiver behind Garrett Wilson, would suddenly jump to the forefront with a much bigger role in the offense. So that's a wrinkle. If Olave's fine, you're going to get a healthy dose of most of the passing game will run through Olave and Garrett Wilson. But if there's no Olave, watch out for Jackson Smith Najigba, a true freshman from Texas.
So guys, why don't we just conclude this crossover podcast, Blue White Breakdown, and is it Buckeyes Talk, Doug? Is that the official name of yours?
You have to say it like this. Buckeye Talk.
Why don't we just, and maybe not give a score, but why don't we just go around the horn and say, what's the one key or the one position group, whether it's Ohio State, maybe you guys pick Ohio State, Greg and I'll pick Penn State. What's the one position group that could determine this game that's not maybe so obvious? I mean, obviously, you know, Justin Fields is a good player, but is there a position maybe that either needs to play better or disappointed you in week one, or is there kind of an underrated position in the Ohio State scheme of things that could really cause problems for Penn State?
I'll jump in with the running backs. We talked about it a lot on Saturday. They just don't have a J.K. Dobbins type guy. Ryan Day admitted it on Tuesday. He thought there was some hesitation early. He thought maybe they could have done a better job with finding holes, but he thought they got better in the second half of the game. He did say Nebraska kind of threw some weird fronts at him, but I'm just very curious, not that you can do it, not that you can stop Justin Fields on this passing game, but if Penn State sells out to say, we're going to whatever, drop eight, we're going to have nobody in the box, we're going to make Justin Fields try to find little windows, but go ahead and run on us. We dare you to run on us. I'm curious to see, like, is Ohio State's run game good enough to do that? Their offensive line is really good, but I still have questions about Trey Sermon and Master Teague at running back. So there's been a lot of dispute. Were they actually fine and the holes just weren't there? Or I thought they just seemed slow to the hole, not great vision, a little hesitant at times. So I'm really curious what the running backs look like in week two. Nathan, what you got?
Yeah, it was actually going to be my answer. And then correlated to that being an offensive line that I think is probably going to come into this game with a little bit of a chip on its shoulder or a little bit of a we want to show more than we did in the first week, because they're supposed to be one of the best offensive lines in the country. I don't think they ever really asserted themselves as such in that first game. Talked to Josh Myers today, the returning starter at center, and I thought he kind of tiptoed around it a little bit. Like, he kind of said, you know, yeah, there were some things we could have done better. Other times where he's alluding to the fact that, like, well, the holes were there and for whatever reason it just didn't happen, which I think if you read into it, I thought it spoke a little bit to what Doug is saying. Sometimes it's bad luck, and then maybe sometimes it's guys need to hit that hole harder in a better way with some more authority and take matters into their own hands a little bit. So I think both sides of the running game, the way the offensive line will be out there kind of paving the way, then the running backs taking better advantage of it. I think they're both challenged to come into this game and have better performances.
I would say it's Penn State's front seven. You're going to need to score points to win this game, but they're also going to have to make a stop or two along the way. And without Jesse Luketta, Penn State's front seven will be working with, I assume it'll be Lance Dixon at a starting linebacker spot. So that'll be a changed wrinkle compared to what they had been working on during the shortened camp and then leading into obviously game week last week. So that's new. But, you know, we saw some flashes from guys like Jason Awe and Adisa Isaac and Shaka Toney. But you know what? To win a game like this, even at home, you're going to have those guys just get a few more plays where they make a difference. And on a third and three or a third and four, they crash in and stop Ohio State. So for me, you could pick a number of Penn State groups. I'm going to go with the front seven. I think they are key to Penn State holding on here. And again, the better your pass rush you have, the more chance you have to take what is green and somewhat green, somewhat experienced secondary, maybe a little bit more out of play.
Yeah, and I'm just going to be watching, Greg. With no Journey Brown, and no Noah Cain. Noah Cain isn't really a flashy runner, but he was a guy that could consistently get yards inside for Penn State when he was healthy. Devin Ford, the starter, I don't think he is really that type of a runner. He's not nearly as big as Noah Cain, and he, you know, he's at the stage of his career where he's probably always looking to bounce stuff. To me, I know they're young, but Penn State's wideout group, Penn State struggled to make chunk plays against Indiana until the very end of the game when Kirk Shiraka schemed up that 60-yard touchdown pass to Jahan Dotson. That was, you know, that was kind of a tricky play design, and I think they kind of confused Indiana to get that guy open. I don't know if it was a pure athletic move that did that, but I do think that Penn State's receivers are going to have to make more plays. They're going to have to break some tackles when they catch the ball. You know, there is no KJ Hamler on this team to turn a 5-yard pass into 93-yard touchdown like 2 years ago in State College when he did that. I just think that they're very raw. They didn't have a spring. They're not really 5-star guys. Justin Shorter, the 5-star, didn't work out. Hamler's in the NFL, and you just can't. The passing game just can't come down to we're going to try and throw the ball 8 yards to Pat Freiermuth. Somebody is going to have to make plays because, Greg, as you said, you got to be able to score points if you're going to hang with Ohio State. And I just wonder how many chunk plays Penn State can generate in this game with no proven runner really and some real questions at the wide receiver position. And, you know, if Jahan Dotson is your best receiver and he's a good receiver, I have to think how he's going to see probably an awful lot of Sean Wade. And if that's the case, who is the skill guy that's going to show up in the passing game for Penn State? I have some real questions about that. If they were playing later in the year, I might feel better about that group because it's really not fair to expect, you know, things to go, you know, smoothly right out of the chute. But I think that's a tricky matchup for Penn State in this game. I'm curious to see how it plays out.
All right, so we're doing this every week. Is that right? It's an official crossover every week now, even when they're not playing each other?
Do it. I'm sure we'll get some Penn State questions from you guys. And I know Greg will tell you, like, Penn State fans always want to know what's going on at Ohio State just because they're the guy you got to catch. They're the guy. That's the program that's making the splash in recruiting. And it is big brother, little brother right now, I think, until Penn State can ever finish out some of these close games. I mean, I would love to do that, but I don't know how Greg feels about it.
Well, I'm sure if Penn State wins this game, I can tell you right now, our readers will want to hear more about what you guys think about Penn State the rest of the way than they will about what anybody thinks about Maryland, Rutgers, or Michigan State, or Illinois, or any of the other teams Ohio State's playing.
Well, I do say this is the one thing about this Ohio State-Penn State game this week is it is a great undercard and a table setter for Ohio State-Rutgers in week three.
It's good that Ohio State can get a game like this to try to take it up in a level approaching what they're going to face when Rutgers comes to town.
Hey, Greg Schiano taught Michigan State a lesson in week one. I wouldn't sleep on those Scarlet Knights. I would not do it. I'm really curious before we close. Honestly, Greg, would you agree? No one really wants to give Indiana credit for playing a gutsy game against a Penn State team. That's always what Ohio State does to Penn State. Winning close games. Penn State's done it to Indiana forever. And I just feel like maybe Indiana's a pretty good team. And it's not, you know, yes, Penn State made a ton of mistakes, but the Hoosiers made a ton of plays when there was no other choice. There was no room for error. And those guys all played better. I just think Indiana might be a pretty good team.
Yeah, I think if Penix Jr. can be a little bit more accurate, that is a group that has some talent at a number of key positions. And, you know, I don't know how great they are defensively, but they always seem to find a way to get a stop when they need one. And, yeah, I think Indiana deserves a lot of credit. Penn State certainly did enough to lose the game. Indiana certainly did enough to win it. I think a lot of the focus, and you can say it's right or it's not, has been put on all that Penn State did to lose that game. And I certainly think Indiana deserves some credit for what it was able to do as well. It did not, like, Penn State tried to hand them a drive to tie the game after Devin's Ford touchdown. You know, and they could have easily went away after Penn State scored in the opening possession of overtime. They didn't, and they walked away with the win because of it.
This was fun. I'm still marveling at Ohio State's got a player named Seven Banks. I don't like that name. I love that name. It's my favorite number. I'm going to be watching him on Saturday night just because of his first name. How about that, Doug?
And he wasn't number seven last year, but no. He is number seven this year.
Yeah, he finally has number seven. This is say what you will about Ohio State. I mean, great names on this team. Master Teague, Steel Chambers, Seven Banks, Tough Borland. Like, there's great names all over this roster.
Bob Flanders, who drove me home on my 21st birthday. Have to mention that every podcast.
This was great, man. I'm glad we got a chance to talk. I'm glad we had a chance to meet Nathan. Doug, I know we're not going to see you Saturday night. Nathan, hopefully we'll get a chance to see you. And we can point you to the nearest sheets after the game for some post-game nourishment. Pickle and I know where all the sheets are in State College if you're hungry after the game.
I know sheets well. I've had, my best friend lives in Pittsburgh. I've stopped at many a sheets over the years. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, that was fun with Bob and Greg, and if you guys have interest in opponents, you can certainly subscribe to that Blue and White Breakdown podcast with those guys. So we'll wrap it up here on Buckeye Talk, but in the break there, Nathan just proposed something based off the discussion we had with those guys about sort of how James Franklin screwed up the game management, particularly with the bad decision about the guy scoring the touchdown there. Nathan, what were you talking about here?
Yeah, so just because my perspective on Ohio State football is only so deep, I don't have as many years going back, so I was just curious for someone like you, and I guess our texters could answer this. When was the last time an Ohio State coach, they were like coming after him with the flames and pitchforks because of a single decision like that he made? Not maybe not so much like it was under Tressel, where people complained about the offense being too boring or whatever. Like, when was the last time a coach did like one thing and then that may have cost a game directly, and where the fans were just like up in arms about it? Cause it doesn't sound like it maybe the first time it's happened with Penn State. This is obviously the most recent example where it's happened at Penn State, but I'm curious, like, when was the last time Ohio State had that same instance?
So let's throw that out there. If you guys want to tell us, you can text us. If you can join the text subscription at 614-350-3315, join that. And then you can send a text to us with your answer. I actually have something in my head that popped in while you were talking about it, but I'll save it for now because I think we might get into this on a later Buckeye Talk, maybe even on the Rapid Fire Buckeye Talk on Thursday. We'll see. That's a good question to think about because they are kind of mad at James.
And Ryan Day just hasn't had that many calls yet. He's still kind of early in the number of decisions he's had to make with a game on the line for people to have. Eventually he'll have one, right? Like, every coach probably has one that has the fans ready to wring their neck for even just that one game.
But yeah, certainly happens less at a place like Ohio State where they don't lose that much. So anyway, thanks to you guys for joining us on this Wednesday Buckeye Talk. The big Buckeye Talk most of the time is going to move to Thursdays now. So make sure you tune in for that. And then we will plan again Thursday evening, live Zoom call with tech subscribers for our picks and preview podcast, where we will give you our game picks for Ohio State, Penn State on Saturday. And then Nathan and Steven will be going to State College for that one on Saturday night. So for Steven Means and Nathan Baird, I'm Doug Lea Maurice. Thanks to you guys. And that was Buckeye Talk.